You are.
Let me take this opportunity. It's 2 o'clock on the dot. And therefore, I think that it is good that we start. We are meeting this afternoon following the failure of SAA to appear before us last week. And therefore, the meeting having to be rescheduled. Battling with my list here, but I'm going to assume that the minister is present and the deputy minister.
Yes, he is.
Right. And the SAA business rescue practitioners and the Department of Public Enterprises. Right. Thanks, Lebo, for sending me through that list. Okay, so we've got the business rescue practitioners. The minister is also a present. Right. Thanks a lot, Lebo. I want to, colleagues, thank you very much for availing yourselves this afternoon for this meeting. And also, then just kick off by saying I want to draw the attention of the business rescue practitioners to the fact that the letter sent to me last week, Monday, whilst was received in a very positive spirit, that positive spirit had to be balanced with the importance of Parliament doing its work. And I do want to say that in future, whether it's the business rescue practitioners or anybody else or any other entity, that a request is merely a request. And so if persons will not be available, then they must indicate such that they will not be attending. Because when you anchor it in a request has got the potential of two responses. Say yes or no. Because the one being petition for the request reserves the right to make a determination. And so while we are fully understanding of the circumstances which had prevailed, compelling one business rescue practitioner not to be present, it was totally unacceptable on the part of SAA to not have anybody else attend after I had been very clear on behalf of the committee that the meeting would proceed. Because if we then make the request a malicious outlook to say, well, we'll send a request and whether they say yes or no, we've made up our minds, then just don't bother. It places us in a very difficult position as a committee and sets into motion a precedent which may make it very difficult for Parliament to do its work. And so that is why I thought I should just clear the air on that front so that there is no ambiguity about what process is. A request does not in any way mean that what you are requesting will be acceded to. And so it was unfortunate that we found ourselves in the kind of position that we find ourselves in last week. But be that as it may, because business rescue practitioners are present here today, I thought I should convey that to them in person, albeit virtually, a virtual person. So I think, colleagues, we're going to proceed with the meeting, and thank you again for availing yourselves during parliamentary recess, and we thank the presiding officers for granting us... Okay, so... After all that I've just said, there's a message to say that the business rescue practitioners are struggling to connect. We are trying to help. All right. Can that be sorted out and then we'll proceed? I'm told that the business rescue practitioners are now online. I'm supposing we are good to go. Are we in a position to proceed? Colleagues, are we in a position to proceed? Can DPE give us guidance on that one?
Two of them are connected. I don't know what the response would be in terms of being ready or not.
Can you get an indication from them? So Rona starts, and then we're told that there's another problem. Mina nje umoya wami vele nje uphansi kuyo yonke le nto. So are we in a position to proceed? Right, colleagues, I just received a call. May I request that we start at 3:15? I will explain the circumstances to the committee members shortly in the WhatsApp group. I mean, 2:15, so we'll take some 7-minute adjournment. Suspension, colleagues, I will be sending you a message in the group now, and then we will start with the business rescue practitioners at 2:15. I'll send it in the form of a voice note just now. All right, colleagues, I think that for the purposes of progress, we will start the issue which I raised in the group may lend us not continuing our work or being delayed and time is not on our side. So I think, colleagues, let's begin we'll see how far we go. Right, the business rescue practitioners are both co-hosts, and so they'll be able to upload the presentation up when we start with them. But I think I will repeat what I said prior to their joining the meeting for the record and in their presence, to say that whilst we received their letter last week Monday with the sensitivity it deserved and treated it as such, a request remains a request, and it is the prerogative of the one whom is being charged with the request to make a determination whether they accede to it or not. And as I pointed out in my response to the letter that was sent to me by the business rescue practitioners, I indicated that the circumstances given to us did not in any way hinder the committee from proceeding, given that there were two business rescue practitioners. And therefore, for the record and to the business rescue practitioners or anybody who may want to conduct themselves in a similar fashion, it was totally unacceptable to have made a determination about presence at our meeting and disregard the response that was given. It sets a dangerous precedent for Parliament and makes accountability and the oversight function a prerogative of those who must account and not that of Parliament. It becomes a dangerous runaway train. Because then it means that those who must account determine the rules for themselves, which is something we cannot accept, wasting both Parliament's time and the taxpayers' money. Because every time a meeting is postponed, other work which should have been done is not done, and the taxpayers' money is wasted. And so I hope that the business rescue practitioners have a very full and keen understanding of what I'm putting to them. That you cannot make a request and then make the determination yourself on that. Rather be bold enough and frank enough to say we're not coming than to give us the kind of runaround which we were given last week. I will not stand for it. This committee will not stand for it. And I think that we've had difficulty at every material point interacting with the business risk practitioners. And I say this, of course, with the full appreciation of the set of circumstances which we say to one of the business rescue practitioners, and I'm wholly sensitive to that. But I think what happened last week must be addressed, if we are to be fair, to one another and to each other, because it was not without precedent that we've interacted with one business rescue practitioner before. So I request that we avoid setting into motion these kind of things, which in future may continue lending credence to the outlook of some that Parliament can be undermined. It would be regrettable that they quote this kind of incident as their benchmark. So I'd like to welcome everybody to the meeting. There is a somewhat 14-page, 13-page presentation that was sent to us. We'll go to that presentation. And then what we will do is we will then field questions, pose questions, and then we'll see how far we go. So, colleagues, good afternoon. And to the delegations present, good afternoon. Can the presentation please be flighted and will be in the hands of the business rescue practitioners of SAA. And just one request, can our cameras please be on if we are addressing the platform, because we are on Parliament's live streaming platform. So we'll hand over to the business rescue practitioners.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon to the Honorable Members. And we also extend our greetings to the Honorable Minister of Public Enterprises, as well as our colleagues from the Department of Public Enterprises. With me, Chair, on the line is my fellow Joint Business Rescue Practitioner, Mr. Les Matheson, together with the Business Rescue Team. And at the outset, Chair, I think it is only appropriate that as the practitioners, we first extend our apologies to you and the committee personally, and indeed accept your reprimand, and I will not repeat it, other than to add that it is certainly not the intention of the DRPs to undermine the work of the committee, which is very important work in terms of ensuring oversight and accountability by those of us who use funds that come from the public purse, and we are indeed sorry, and we can confidently say we will not seek to have a repeat of that. And then, more importantly, Chair, on the issues of today, the letter from the committee was asking that we address a number of things. We provide a response on the apps. We provide an update, as well as provide an update to the committee on the SIU investigations in at SAA. The issue around the apps, Honorable Chair, and the members of the committee, is still the same, that given the business rescue process, there hasn't been an audit, given the uncertainties that come with the business rescue process, which we hope the presentation will give the committee comfort that the end is nigh in terms of the exit to the business rescue, and restoring the operations of the company to them being run in the ordinary course of business, with the board providing the overall authority and guidance and oversight over the operations of the company. And so to that extent, as we did the last time, Chair, we would be comfortable forwarding to the committee the management accounts as at the end of January 2021, which is exactly what we had done the last time. And so to the extent that then that will provide the committee sufficient information on the financial, at least the financial reporting of the entity. And specific to the update, Honorable Chair, I'm going to put the presentation so that we are able to deal with it. And if I can just get 1 minute to just sort it out, Chair.
So, no, that's fine.
But is it coming as a
BLP, if just may I clear your doubts momentarily. Minister Kodan, before we start, I think as we usually do, is there anything from the ministerial side which we'd like to raise, and then the business rescue practitioners can then give us their update?
Well, good afternoon to you, Chair, and to the members, and to the BR team, and the Chair of the Interim Board, and others that are listening in. Just to say that we hope that the business rescue practitioners will be able to satisfy all of the questions that you've raised. They, as you know, from the 6th of December 2019 until the exit takes place out of business rescue are responsible for SAA, and neither the board nor the shareholder has any influence over what they do, except that we do from time to time engage with them. And secondly, thank you for your indulgence. I have to just listen to Judge Deputy Chief Justice Zondo, who was commenting on an incident that took place when I appeared before him earlier this week. So thank you very much, and Mr. Dong Wan, I can certainly continue.
Right, so thank you very much, Minister. The business rescue practitioner may then proceed with the presentation, and then colleagues, you will come in for questions. Honorable Hadebe, you will be first off the bat.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Honourable Minister. In terms of the contents of the presentation, Chair and members, we would want to just provide an update on the timeline since we last appeared in front of this committee, and then more importantly, provide a breakdown of the funding that was allocated to the entity, as well as outlined in the medium-term budget policy statement. And then we take it to the next level, Chair and members, where we demonstrate how that funding has been utilized to date in implementing the plan. We then provide, an update on issues relating to employees and labor, in general, particularly relating to voluntary severance packages and retrenchments, and an update on where we are with the lockout involving the members of SAPA, which is the pilots, the main or the majority union of the pilots. We then spend a very brief time just taking the committee through the conclusion of the business rescue process, including the setting up of the receivership, what the receivership is and what the receivership is intended to deal with. And then at the end, just provide the committee with some insight in terms of, as the Honorable Minister said, the business search process started on the 6th of December 2019. We are now on the 25th of March 2021. In more than a year, what has the process achieved? And without wasting time, Chen, the last time we appeared was in November, and subsequent to that, we received 1.5 billion rand of the 10.5 billion for the implementation of the business rescue plan. In November, end of November, and in early December, the department appointed an interim board, as the Honorable Minister indicated in his opening remarks and welcoming the chairperson of the interim board, Mr. Krenner. And as the BRPs, we engaged early on with the interim board and provided them an update on where the business rescue process is and what are the issues that lie ahead, and what is dependent on the money being received, and what are the timelines vis-a-vis the exit of the business rescue process. On the 18th of December, the company initiated a lockout of of the pilots who are members of SAPA, the South African Airways Pilots Association, and that lockout comes on the back of a very lengthy period of negotiations with SAPA, and the negotiations primarily around the setting aside of the regulating agreement that has been in place for a significant period, that in our view and in the view of the company has become the proverbial millstone around the company in doing certain things except with the express authorization or approval by SAPA. On the 20th of January 2021, the current year, we then received the second tranche of 1.3 billion. And then on the 12th of February, we received the third tranche of 5 billion rand. Thus, to date, Chair and Honorable Members, SAA has received 7.8 billion rand for the implementation of the business rescue plan. It is comforting for me, given the fact that the issue of how long does the business rescue plan take, that we believe having received 7.8 billion, we have a level of comfort that we believe the process should be coming to an end in the next few weeks once certain key activities have taken place. What is the breakdown of the funding that we received from the medium-term budget policy statement? The 10.5 billion is broken down into five buckets. The first bucket of 2.8 billion is intended to pay amounts relating to employees, and those amounts include the payment of amounts for voluntary severance packages, the retrenchments, as well as the settling of unpaid salaries. It is worthwhile to remind the members that during 2020, particularly when the first lockdown began and the airline was not able to fly, we were not in a position to pay salaries to employees, and we owed employees salaries for a number of months. So the issue around the unpaid salaries relates to that. The second bucket of 800 million rand relates to amounts of monies we owed to creditors that afforded us credit and provided goods and services to keep the airline afloat whilst we were in operating after the beginning of the business rescue process, and these creditors would include creditors that enable us to keep and maintain the airline operating infrastructure. The third bucket relates to working capital, primarily intended for the restart of operations in order to take the restructured airline forward. The fourth bucket is monies owing in lieu of unflown tickets. Members would know that it is typical that passengers would book flights, would pay for the flight, and then only take the flight a few weeks or a few months down the line. So this money relates to all those tickets where we have received the money from passengers but have not been able to provide the service of flying them to their intended destination. And the last bucket is for the recapitalization of the subsidiaries of SAA, being SAA Technical, Air Chefs, and Mango. And the total of that was 10.5 billion. As I've mentioned in my opening remarks, we received then the funds from the department in three tranches to date, amounting to 7.8 billion. When we received the first tranche, it came with a number of conditions, including that the funds have to be used for the payment of 2 months' salaries, payment of post-commencement creditors, working capital, as well as settling off amounts owing to subsidiaries. We were not able to use this amount when we received it in November, because it was important that we ensure that the conditions align to the Companies Act in terms of how we are supposed to make payments in business rescue, and that the first thing that we needed to have was the settling of all amounts owing to employees, as well as settling amounts owing to creditors that have provided goods and services to the airline during the business rescue process. In the second tranche, those conditions were corrected, but more importantly, in the second tranche, there was a proposal for the settlement of the salaries owing to employees, because we had been owing employees salaries for 8 months from April to November. And as part of that funding, there was an agreement for the settlement of those salaries to 3 months. And that settlement was taken up by a number of unions, and I'm going to deal with that in about two slides further down. Lastly, we then received the third tranche of 5 billion, which enabled us to make good on payments to employees in terms of VSPs, and then extend that to payments of VSPs for pilots and management. And then currently we are just engaging with the department on how we utilize the balance of those funds in order to make sure that the utilization of the funds is in line with the business rescue plan that was adopted in July 2020, as well as in line with the funding commitments provided by government and the department. The amount that is outstanding at the moment is 2.7 billion, which relates to the recapitalization of subsidiaries. It is also important at this point to remind the committee and members that the subsidiaries are not in business rescue, and that the interim board is providing oversight over the subsidiaries. How have we then used the 7.8 billion rand that we have received to date? We, as I've mentioned previously, we have settled with employees on the outstanding salaries of 8 months, and in that settlement with employees, we have paid them a full and final settlement effective from the date they signed the settlement. And that full and final settlement is for 3 months. And in line with that, 3,888 employees took on the settlement, and we have since paid 360.7 million to those employees who have taken the settlement. It is also important for me to highlight at this point that not all the unions agreed on the settlement, and that in fact SACA and NUMSA launched an application that they be paid the 3 months cash. However, they are not prepared to sign the 3 month settlement, and we are happy to report that that application was dismissed in the Labour Court. In addition to settling the salaries, we have paid 1.55 billion in voluntary severance packages to 3,140 employees. There is a small number of employees that whose voluntary severance packages were deferred to the end of March. Those will be paid when these employees terminate their employment with the company at the end of this month. And the other smaller portion relates to payments that are outstanding as a consequence of some administration issues, mainly relating to tax directive for certain employees that the business rescue team together with the finance and HR teams at SAA are currently resolving. The third bucket, we have paid 400 million rand to post-commencement creditors. As I've mentioned previously, these are the creditors that provide goods and services to the airline. Of importance for us here is that it has been quite a lengthy and tedious process to make sure that we reconcile the amounts owing to these creditors, so that first we make sure that we are paying them the correct amount, and secondly, we ensure that the books are properly reconciled, so that we do not have issues going forward, particularly once the business practitioners have left or exited the airline. Finally, on the funds that we've utilized, we have paid 700 million rand in connection with unflown tickets. We have taken a decision right at the beginning of the lockdown that we prefer, and in that regard, issued travel vouchers to passengers that we were not able to fly as a consequence of the lockdowns. Those travel vouchers remain valid until February 2023, and this is just to allow for the current uncertainties associated with COVID and the lockdowns to come to an end, and so enable those passengers to make use of the travel vouchers. And the reason that we had preferred travel vouchers over providing refunds was to ensure that we are able to keep the passengers and make sure that we are able to deliver that service to the passengers when the airline restarts, but at the same time recognizing the limitations of cash that we've had over the last year. At the moment, we continue to incur costs primarily for the care and maintenance of the airline, but more importantly, we want to make sure that the airline has adequate working capital to be able to restart operations when the airline is ready with that process. And this is also important for the termination of the business rescue, because there are two things that we seek to achieve in terminating the business rescue: that we restore the solvency of the airline, which means its assets must exceed its liabilities. That's the first part. The second part is that the liquidity of the airline is also restored, which means that the airline has got adequate working capital to pay its debts as they fall due. I would like now to move to the next slide, which is about an update on matters relating to employees. As I've mentioned in the previous slides around how we utilize the money that we received, we settled the salaries that had been unpaid for 8 months. In that settlement, four unions came on board. That was National Transport Movement, Satawu Awusa and Solidarity, as well as two formations within SAA that represent non-unionized employees, being non-unionized management as well as non-unionized non-management staff. We also extended that settlement to employees that were members of unions that had not taken up the settlement agreement, and those unions are SACA, the union for the cabin crew members, NUMSA, as well as the union for the pilots. And as I mentioned previously, there was an 85% take-up on that settlement, and that excludes, unfortunately, pilots who had not taken up that settlement. As far as VSPs are concerned, 3,246 employees took up the VSPs. We have paid and processed and exited 3,140 employees. As I mentioned previously, the remaining 100 odd employees will be resolved in the next few weeks, as a consequence of them exiting the airline at the end of March, as well as resolving some of the admin issues. I mentioned in earlier when we provided the timeline that on the 18th of December, the company locked out SAFA pilots. As I also mentioned at the time that SAFA is the majority pilots union, we had that locked in the negotiations, and the negotiations are still ongoing, as is the case with negotiations. It's a give and take exercise, but we are guided by a number of principles, and the number of principles in the context of a business rescue is that it is important for all the various stakeholders in the company to recognize that almost everyone has to give a little bit in order to enable a scenario where the company is able to move forward on a sound footing. As business rescue practitioners, we remain hopeful that an acceptable settlement between ourselves and SAFA will be reached, and will be reached soon, so that the airline can move forward on a sound footing. On the issue of the conclusion of the business rescue process, this is I'll be left with two slides after this, Honourable Chair and members, and thereafter we'll be able to take questions. The issue of concluding the business rescue process, as is required in the Companies Act, we will file a notice of substantial implementation once we have achieved a number of things. In the last presentation to this committee, we had taken the committee through some of the conditions that were inserted in the business rescue plan that are required in order for the business rescue to be considered to have been substantially implemented, and I'm not going to repeat those. But at the present moment, an important thing for us is that we are able to make payments to employees at a minimum in terms of their unpaid salaries, or alternatively, if those payments are not made for whatever reason, as we have found with the VSPs, where at times the reasons that we're not able to make payments as a company, it is due to some administrative issues that just need to be resolved, those monies are actually ring-fenced so that when those admin issues have been resolved, the money could then be paid to the employees. So that's the first one. The second issue is that we are able to make payments to all post-commencement creditors, so that when we exit the business rescue, all those creditors who had provided goods and services during the business rescue process have been paid. The final issue was that an election is made by creditors of receivers, and those receivers are then able to establish the receivership. And I think it's important, Chair, for me to just explain to the committee and the members what the receivership is. Chair, an important part of bringing SAA to solvency is that the business rescue process must be able to deal with the debts and liabilities of SAA. You will recall in the last presentation we made that we indicated that the company in the main owes the following categories of people. It owes lenders who had provided funding to the company on the back of government guarantees. It owes monies to aircraft lessors, and that we were able during the business rescue process to negotiate with aircraft lessors and agree on a settlement, which I'll talk about it a little later. And it owes money to general creditors, what we refer to as general concurrent creditors. It is these buckets of people that are owed monies the money that is being owed to lenders is allocated in the budget and will be payable through the fiscus to the lenders over the next 3 years. And so is the money that we were able to negotiate a compromise and a settlement with both aircraft lessors as well as concurrent creditors. It is the intention of the process to take all of those monies, all of that debt out of SAA into a different entity, which we refer to as the receivership. And in so doing, we take out that debt out of SAA into the receivership, and the remaining debt in SAA will be then written off in order to make sure that the company is solvent and it doesn't carry a significant amount of debt in its books. So the receivership has been designed and is being set up in order to receive that debt. That's the first part. So if I then go to the slide on the receivership, I mentioned that the business rescue process will come to an end once the BRPs have filed a notice of substantial implementation, as was articulated in the business rescue plan, and that notice will be filed with the commission. And at that point, SAA will then be discharged from the business rescue proceedings. What does that mean in real terms? The minister has ably indicated a number of times, including today, that during the business rescue process or proceedings, the BRPs remain in charge of the company in substitution of its board. So when the company has been discharged from the business rescue, the authority and oversight and governance over the company will revert back to the board. And at that point, the receivership will then be deemed to have commenced, and the receivers will then be tasked with the duties that have been contemplated in the business rescue plan. And essentially, the main role of the receivers is to ensure that they receive monies for the settlement of those liabilities over the next 3 years, and make sure that they pay those monies to the three categories of lenders, concurrent creditors, and aircraft lessors. Those who are following closely the notices that the business rescue practitioners issue during the business rescue process will know that early in the week we have issued a notice to affected parties, wherein we indicated that Bongani Ngasana and myself have been nominated as the receivers in the receivership. And last week, Friday, we received votes by way of a proxy from creditors who voted in favor of the nominations. And so, as things stand, we will be the receivers in the receivership. Finally, Chair and members, what has the business rescue process achieved? We believe at the point of exiting the business rescue, SAA will be transformed from being an insolvent company to a company that is both solvent and liquid, because they would have the working capital as provided in the allocation and the monies that have been dispersed to the company by the shareholder for it to be able to pay its commitments as they fall due. Of importance to us is that the business rescue process resulted in the reduction of liabilities of the airline, liabilities as well as claims, because it is important that we remember that at the point at which certain contracts were terminated because the airline was not able to fly, the airline was liable to claims for damages and interest to those parties. And as part of a compromise that we negotiated with lessors and concurrent creditors, we were able to manage that And the reduction in those liabilities and claims is to the tune of about 35.7 billion rand. The third and very important thing is that there was a general consensus that SAA had a significantly a high number of staff relative to airlines of its size. We have now gone through a process where we reduced the airline's employees from 4,700 to approximately 1,000 through a VSP process, as well as a successful Section 189 process, which the courts confirmed that the process the VRP has undertaken was legal and in line with the Labor Relations Act. The next point is that as part of the reduction of the workforce, we are happy to say that the severance payments that were paid to employees were significantly much better than what employees would have received under a liquidation scenario. It is worthwhile to remind members in the committee that at the beginning of the business rescue process, a liquidation calculation dividend was performed by PwC, which came to a conclusion that if the airline had been liquidated at that point, there would hardly be anything available for payment to creditors as well as employees. We were able, through this process, to reduce significantly the general overheads of the airline in two ways. One, a focus on the renegotiation with suppliers to ensure that those contracts are on acceptable commercial terms, as well as revision of terms and conditions of employment in order to reduce the salary overhead. Throughout this process, we've been able to preserve the memberships that will enable the airline to continue and restart, and those include membership with IATA, the Star Alliance, among others. And ultimately, we believe on balance, we have been able to preserve the infrastructure of the airline so that the restart of the airline is not compromised. Chair, that is our update in terms of the business rescue process. And the last issue that I just want to touch on briefly, which is not on a slide, is that relating to the SIU investigations. Chair, you will remember that the SIU did a presentation to this committee on the 3rd of March, and in that presentation, it provided the committee with a report on the investigations on SAA. We have circulated that report with the committee. The two issues that we would like to touch on as a business rescue practitioners are the following two. One is the issue relating to McKinsey wishing to reimburse a number of SOEs for the funds that they have received in lieu of fees. We are just happy to say that as SAA, we have contributed and continue to provide the necessary information to the SIU so that they can continue with that process, and to the extent necessary, that which is due to SAA will be received by SAA. And the second one is an investigation that is currently ongoing, involving work that was provided for legal services through a panel. We received an interim report from the SIU where they recommended that the individual involved be suspended pending the finalization of those investigations. That individual was suspended. More importantly, though, is that the individual had applied for a VSP and we withheld that VSP. And so it's also important at this point to just correct a misstatement during that SIU presentation, that actually that individual did not resign, as was mentioned. That individual remains in the employ of SAA. We have not provided that individual with the benefit of a VSP until these the investigations by the SIU are completed, and therefore, based on those investigations, the company will then act on the recommendations from the SIU. Chair, I would like to thank you for providing us with this opportunity, and we will be guided by you on how we proceed. Thank you.
All right, no, thank you very much for that. Colleagues, is Honorable Hardeber online? Okay, he has not been able to join us. He's got connectivity problems. All right, let us get the first question. Honorable Lees, you'll be first off the bat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon to everyone. Perhaps the presentation can be taken down now. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'm going to ask if in what format we're doing this. Is this in a hearing format, or do we put all the questions at one time?
It's an update, it's a briefing, so we will put all the questions at once, but maybe time.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, you're breaking up very badly.
I'm thinking.
You're breaking up still, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I don't know that whether others heard you, but I'm afraid I couldn't make out what you're saying. But I did get the beginning that it's not a hearing as such, so we need to put all the questions. I hope that's what you were saying. Is that correct? Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to proceed. I'm afraid I can't hear you. It might just be me. Ben, can you hear the chair?
No, it's breaking very, very badly.
Okay, thanks, Ben. Okay, I'll proceed then. What I'll do then, I'll put the questions into groups. I'd like to begin with you, Minister Gordhan, and ask you a few questions. And so I'll get on with that. First question is, has an agreement to sell any shares in SAA to a third party been negotiated? And what shareholding would remain in state hands if it has? The first question. The second question, it revolves around the January proposed flight to fetch vaccines from Mumbai. Did you at any stage after the SAA manager had taken the decision to not authorize the first flight on or about the 31st January, have any direct or indirect communication with the SAA manager who took this decision? If so, was it directly with the manager or via a third party? And what, if so, what are the details of the substance of those communications? And the third question, to some extent, Zivua Dongwana has dealt with it, but it really is very inconclusive. He's indicating that the financial statements will come at some unknown time in the future because of the business rescue and no audit having been done. I can't see that that is an acceptable position. Surely there should be an audit and the financial statements for the past, it'll now be 3 years, I think, should be produced. Honorable Gordhan, then, Minister Gordhan, then there's the question of the 2.7 billion rand that has not been paid out for subsidiaries. Now, the business rescue practitioners appear to be of the opinion that they despite being the SAA business rescue practitioners and the subsidiaries being just that, subsidiaries don't have any responsibility for the subsidiaries, which is a bit strange given that in their business rescue plan they talk about capital for those subsidiaries. But nevertheless, the $2.7 billion hasn't been paid out. And on what basis of the PFMA would such funding be justified? It's not in terms of the business rescue process, because that's coming to an end according to the business rescue practitioners. Then what is the actual financial position of subsidiaries? I've asked about the SAA financials, but the subsidiaries, the business rescue practitioners, have pointed out are not in business rescue. Where are their financial statements or annual reports? When will they be available? And what are the financial status of the two main, the SAA Technical and Mango? May I then, Mr. Chairman, I hope you're back, but I then, I'm not sure whether to move on to questions for the business rescue practitioners. Are you there, Mr. Chairman?
Let's get a response to that set of 3-4 questions. And
thank
then
you.
We'll come for a second bite. So maybe colleagues will do it that way. We'll pose a set of questions, get your responses in your next set. So let's get a response to those questions, please.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and Mr. Lees. First question is about whether there's an agreement to sell shares. No, not yet. The second question is in relation to a SAA flight to Mumbai. To the best of my knowledge, there was no Mumbai flight to collect vaccines, so Mr. Lees has probably got his facts wrong.
I'm sorry, that's unacceptable. I will repeat the question if that's necessary.
Go ahead.
All right, clarify the question and so that we can move on.
The question was, the flight that did not take place was stopped by an SAA manager. My question to you was whether or not you had, Honourable Gordon, had any communication either directly or indirectly with the SAA manager who had stopped that flight from taking place. And if you did, what were the details of the substance of those communications?
So let me repeat, Chair. As far as I know, there was no intended flight to Mumbai, as far as vaccines are concerned. If there were any other, the businesses came out. Practitioners should explain that to you. Secondly, we were during this period attempting to do what other airlines have been attempting to do, and that is to ensure that the cargo side of the business gets off the ground, and we tried to do that with the relevant business rescue practitioner or his representative, and the Brussels flight, which eventually got off the ground, notwithstanding substantial efforts by pilots, or some of the pilots that belong to the Pilots Association, to sabotage that flight, and which continues until today, eventually, with the consent of the Civil Aviation Authority, that flight did take off, and there were discussions between DPE and the relevant people involved on the SAA side, but if you have the name of a particular manager, you can let me have that, and that we can then answer more specifically. Secondly, or thirdly, excuse me, on the question of the financial statements, we had recent interactions with the Auditor General, who said that given the business rescue status of the airline, they had not conducted any audits, so we'll have to go back to the Auditor General and find out that once the airline is out of business rescue, what is the process to be actually followed. So I'm not au fait with the details in this particular regard. The $2.7 billion that was intended for the subsidiaries was part of the $10.5 billion run package, which we had actually informed all of you about, and informed the public about, and informed other committees in Parliament about, and was always, as I said, part of the 10.5. So whilst the subsidiaries were not under business rescue themselves, the group was impacted by the major component within the group, which is SAA, the airline, and so the connection between the two always was one of the issues. And as a result, we come to your last question about the actual position of the subsidiaries. We've also been saying for some time that SAA Technical, is also in need of restructuring in order that it can find its feet, and is also the target, if you like, of several expressions of interest by potential partners or people who want to acquire it. So we will give some attention to that once that money is actually available. Mango, on the other hand, is flying at the moment, but it's got its own challenges in relation to creditors. But subsidiaries don't in their own right produce their annual reports and financial statements. That's normally done as a group. So once we've consulted with the Auditor General, we'll let COPA know about how we intend to deal, or how SAA intends to deal with the questions around the annual reports and the financial statements and the audits that are necessary for those purposes. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Honourable Dis, you will come in, and then we will do a follow-up to your question, and then we'll take the next stage. Minister, we want SAA to be functional so that we can go to the nice destinations, which are your background. Let's all hope for that. All right, Honourable Dis, over to you.
I thought I'll compete with Honourable Dis. You see, he looks very static and unexciting, you know.
He's at work. That's one. All right. Honourable, this is your second batch of questions, and then we'll move on, colleagues, to... All right. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. I'm rather pleased that Honourable Gordon has clarified for me, because I thought he was actually on holiday at Mauritius somewhere. So I'm pleased to hear it's just the background.
It's the Bahamas, not Mauritius.
Oh, the Bahamas. But there's no SAA to fly you then. All right, Mr. Chairman, may I now just ask some questions of the business rescue practitioners? I'm really speaking, I suppose, to Sevewe, but I presume Les is there as well somewhere. But what is the estimated extent of further capital funding required in order to get SAA operational and profitable? What you've been saying to us is that the $10.5 billion, putting aside the $2.7 billion, is sufficient to get the airline operating again. But will it, from day one, run at a profit? I think that would be highly unlikely. So how much more money does your plan, business rescue plan, foresee being necessary to get the airline up and running and back to profitability? And does the October 2020 revised business rescue plan include an increased funding requirement of $19.3 billion? That's the one question. Linked to that is, in terms of the latest position of the airline and the industry as a whole, when is it projected that SAA will show profitability? In other words, which financial year in the future? Okay, Mr. Chairman, you've dealt at some length about the non-appearance of the business rescue practitioners and the FAA board at the last meeting. But yeah, I think I'm going to leave that question for now. But the point I was going to make, Mr. Chairman, is that the business rescue practitioners chose not to attend our meeting on Tuesday last week. And yet, 2 days later, they were able to produce a report to the public, so-called affected persons, that is some 24 pages long, a great deal more detail than the BRPs have chosen to give to this committee of parliament today. And so to me it's just another indication of the dereliction on the part of the BRPs and the contempt they appear to hold for parliament. But I'll move on, and there's no question there. Chairman, the next question is regard to the SAA flights to and from Brussels to collect the COVID-19 vaccines on or about the 24th of February 2021. The first question is, what were the total costs of the flights to and from Brussels, and who paid for these flights? What were the total costs of the flights, and who paid for the flights? The official from the DPE made a public statement, as apparently, that there was commercial cargo carried on those flights. Please can we be told whether or not that was the case, and if so, what was the cargo? And that's question two. Question three, the departure of the flight was delayed or cancelled, and apparently the CAA was blamed for that. What was the cause of that delay? That was the next question. Mr. Chairman, the next question deals with a public statement, quite an angrily worded public statement issued by the BRPs yesterday. In that statement, you indicated that the incident, and I'm referring now to the so-called Alpha Floor incident, is currently being investigated. And yet you also state that SAA can confirm that the occurrence of a pending Alpha Floor was signaled, and the pilots identified the symptoms prior to an impending Alpha Floor and took appropriate corrective action. It was the appropriate actions of the flight crew that prevented any further warnings. Now, as the investigations have apparently barely got off the ground, on what basis did you make these public statements of fact that have yet to be established? Two, are you licensed and qualified to make the above-mentioned statements? And three, did or did not an Alpha Floor incident occur? Because your statement seems to indicate it didn't occur, it was pending. Did it or did it not occur? Mr. Chairman, in terms of the Companies Act, and both Minister Bourdain and Sivuwe Dongwana have confirmed this afternoon that the business rescue practitioners are entirely accountable and responsible for the operations of SAA in the place of the board and the senior executives. So the question is, why did you, as BRP BRPs allow the flights to and from Belgium, Brussels to be undertaken when you were clearly aware of the high safety risks involved and that numerous exemptions had been issued by the CAA to make the flight possible? Do you accept that you must be held accountable for the consequences of those flights? And the last question with regard to those flights was the CRM training, crew resource management training, of the flight crew current and up to date? Chairman, I move on to the next category. The business rescue plan includes a provision for all unions to have accepted the new terms and conditions and for retrenchments to have been occurred. As Zibiwe has now pointed out to us, this has not been the case. There are a number of unions that have not accepted, and 90% of the pilots are locked out and are thus not available to fly aircraft. The first question, why has the provision for all unions to have accepted the new terms not been achieved? We've been told it's not been achieved, but why has it not been achieved? And what will happen to these employees if the business rescue process is exited? What is the status of those employees after the business rescue process ceases? How can the business rescue be considered to have been substantially implemented if this provision has not been achieved and 90% of the pilots are locked out? Who will fly the aircraft? Mr. Chairman, the other questions really center on the CAA. I think I'm going to have to wait until we can speak to them about that. So let me leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Last honorable list, can we get those responses, please?
Chairperson, can I come in for a moment, please?
Go ahead.
So, on the first issue that Mr. Lees raises, further capital funding, I think these sorts of questions have created a lot of confusion in the public mind. So it's important that we clarify it. The first point I want to make is that we've always said, and that has been the mandate from government, that government will take responsibility for all restructuring costs. Secondly, there might be some money made available in the 10.5 for that's what we used to call interim flying. And that thirdly, the fiscus will not make any contribution in the future, and let me emphasize that. The fiscus will not be required to make any contribution in the future. Because the parallel process to this that is taking place is the acquisition of a strategic equity partner. And with all of those interested parties that discussions have taken place with, it has been made clear that once we take, as government, responsibility for the restructuring costs, the partner has to come in with future capital, and that will then, together with the appropriate planning and expertise that is brought in both from South Africa or from within the SAA where it is available and from outside, the viability of the airline will be determined. There were projections earlier in 2020 in terms of the Seabury report that was acquired. And as Mr. Dongwano probably explained, the original, let's call it flat plan in the business rescue plan. But a lot has changed and COVID has impacted on the aviation industry both globally and in South Africa as well. So questions about whether it will run at a profit or not and so on is connected to the first question that Mr. Lee asked, which is what's the future shareholding going to look like in the airline once the discussions with the strategic equity partners have been concluded. So I don't think Mr. Dongwana can add, if he likes, and I thought it's my responsibility or our responsibility to clarify these matters. The second question was a set of issues I want to raise as a concern. I'm not sure if we are here to answer questions that the Pilots Association is feeding to one or other party. The details, for example, that are being asked about the Brussels flight and so on, it's got nothing to do with the business rescue process. And the questions clearly indicate, particularly the one around unions, that there's something going on which creates a huge amount of discomfort, I think, in a parliamentary context. For example, Mr. Lee says 90% of the pilots have been locked out. But I'm not sure if the committee is aware that a substantial number of pilots have left the original Pilots Association, have joined a new association under the labor organization called NTM, which has now created a pilots, let's call it wing or association, and those pilots are available to fly, provided that the requirements of the CAA are met. But the committee should also know, if you want to go into this level of detail, and I referred to this earlier on, that members of the Pilots Association, as I said earlier, are doing everything possible and ultimately to their own detriment to sabotage SAA from getting off the ground, particularly because some of them run the training section within SAA and keep postponing training that can easily be done fairly quickly in order that pilots are up to date in terms of whatever the regulatory requirements are. So I'd like you, Chair, to take this into consideration, because I don't think that the committee members should be lobbied by external forces. If there are questions that the pilots want to put, they must put them to us, and then we'll answer them. But what the Pilots Association and its leadership is doing at the moment is highly detrimental to what we want to achieve as government, which is get a successful airline off the ground. Thank you very much.
Right. I fully understand that these matters are highly complex, technical, and political. But I think Minister Letta's, whilst your concerns may be valid from the vantage point from which you sit, and on the basis of the information before you, I would suggest though that we do not venture down casting aspersions on members or on the committee. Because when words like lobbied are used, that muddies the waters. And so whilst your concerns on the issues that are taking place on a daily basis as you interact with them may be valid, I don't think the characterization of the questions to the extent to which you have can be sustained.
May I respond, please?
Yes, Minister.
No, I think the if I haven't understood clearly, let me explain. I said the concern would be if there was lobbying taking place. concern, because I think that members of parliament would want to be outside of any lobbying process and objectively raise whatever the concerns are that they have out of observations of numbers or narratives that are actually produced. So that's my concern. But it's a subject for another day. And I'm not casting aspersions, I'm raising a general concern that, of course, all of us need to be careful about. We get lobbied as well, but that doesn't mean we abide by the lobbying. Thank you.
No, it's fine. I think we are saying one and the same thing, Minister. I'm going to take this particular matter on advisement, and should we ever need to return to it, I will do so and I will communicate to the Minister on it. But I think I maintain that the characterization of questions along the lines of lobby or as qualified as that may have been now, I will look at Hansard and the transcripts, and we will revisit this matter. All right. Thank you very much. Can we get further responses to any of the questions that were raised, and then the Honourable Kacharia will come in.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of further capitalization of funding for the airline, I am not going to venture beyond what the Minister had provided, because I think that's sufficient. Suffice to say that on the fundamental issue of when is AAA likely to get to profitability, I think it's common cause, Honourable Chair, that crystal ball has become very dim for the entire aviation industry. There are just so many variables that affect the profitability of an airline in the context of what COVID has done to the industry. And I think it's a very, very difficult question. However, I think the most important thing is understanding foundational principles that have been undertaken to ensure that the airline is in a good position when it restarts operations, that it has got a very low overhead structure, and that's very important, because the what is going to ultimately determine profitability is dependent on the fleet sizes, the routes, the prices that are pending, that are currently available in the market, and a whole host of factors. But what is within the airline's control, and what this process has done, was to ensure that the baseline overhead cost structure of SAA is quite lean, and I think that will put the airline in good stead going forward. On the issue regarding the flight on the 24th of February, again, there's another principle that we have adopted as the practitioners in line with the operations, that to the extent that there are opportunities for the airline to make quick gains from opportunities that arise in the cargo space, the airline would most certainly take those opportunities, particularly where the profitability is ensured. And this flight was one of those. Various pieces of cargo were transported. What we are not comfortable disclosing, though, to the committee, beyond saying that the flight was profitable, is the cost, because that's competitive information, and we're operating in a space where everyone is trying to get the business, and I don't think it would be wise for us to put ourselves at a disadvantage by sharing our cost structure, and I would ask the committee to indulge us on that one. Suffice to say that we ran that flight at a profit, as we do all the various cargo and repatriation flights that we've ran throughout the lockdown period, even for the repatriation of foreigners that were in the country, notwithstanding the fact that we're not seeking to make a profit out of those flights, but at the minimum, we wanted to ensure that at least those flights are cost neutral because those were humane, they were driven primarily by the humane factor. On the issue of the investigations,
but just 1 second, your appeal, is that a point of order?
Chairman, yeah, I think there might have been, my use of the word costs was probably being misunderstood. What we are asking is whoever commissioned the flights, what were they charged? How much did it cost the customer? In other words, the selling price. That is not a question that is in the realm of competitive information. And then what was the other cargo that was carried?
Yep. There's a clarity on the question. Can we get a response?
Thank you, Chair, and thanks, Honorable Liz. It is common cause, Honorable Chair and members, that when various companies are looking for service providers, they send out requests for quotations. And whoever provides the quotation that is most suitable to the purchaser will get the work. But to share the basis around which you charge the client, that is what we said. It is competitive information because it then means that our competitors have a direct line of sight into what pricing what the basis of pricing on which we got the particular work.
Chairman, I'm sorry. This is a parliamentary question. We need an answer, please.
Right. Can we momentarily? I will look at that, and I will come back with a ruling.
All right. Thanks, Chair. And so on the. The issue around the statement, Honourable Chair and members, you would appreciate that there is an SAA Safety Department that has been looking into the matter and is launching has launched the investigation in parallel to the investigation that is also going on with the Civil Aviation Authority, and I would ask that we allow that process to unfold, and then when that report comes out, it be presented to the committee, and so through that process, then we take out any issues around this process to only what is factually picked up and investigated, and the report thereon has been provided. The new terms and conditions have been accepted broadly by all the unions, and a proof of that is that the current structure that has been populated based on the airline having 1,000 people has continued and has been populated at various levels. The only exception to this is it is SAFA whom we are still negotiating with. And as a principle, without getting into the detail of the negotiation, even SAFA themselves are not opposed to the new terms and conditions. But the SAFA settlement is a broad settlement that involves a number of items that we need to find agreement on, and those items include the new terms and conditions. And the final point on this labor issue is that it is commonly acceptable, and this view was also echoed by the judge in the Labor Court, that a lockout is an acceptable industrial action to get, as is a strike an acceptable industrial action, to get parties over a logjam so that there's final agreement. And that is why we remain positive and hopeful that we would be able to reach agreement with SAPA on these matters. Thank you, Jim.
All right. We'll come back to those other issues shortly. Honorable Kacharya.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two tranches of questions, one for the Right Honourable Minister of Public Enterprises and another set for the district. I will...
We are struggling to hear Honourable Kacharya.
Interjection. Honourable Kacharya, your audio.
Is that better?
Now, come closer to the device. Yes, there.
Is that better?
Yes, Honourable Kacharya, that's much better. Thank you.
Right. So I'll begin with my first tranche of questions, which are for the Right Honourable Minister of Public Enterprises, Praveen Gordhan. The first question is, what are the names of private equity partners for SAA who have been in discussions with yourself, sir, the DPE, SAA, the BRPs, or any other connected and affected persons? Secondly, were all the prescripts of the PFMA followed in awarding the contract to fetch COVID-19 vaccines from Brussels in Belgium on or about the 24th of February 2021, adhered to, and if not, why not? Thirdly, are there any plans to use SAA and or Mango for flying COVID-19 vaccines internationally, regionally, in Africa, or around South Africa? Other than the SAA flights to and from Belgium, on or about the 24th of February 2021, have any other such flights been undertaken by SAA or Mango since the first vaccines were received in South Africa on or about the 31st of January 2021? If so, were all the PFMA requirements adhered to? Thank you.
It's Honourable Minister Gordhan. And Honourable Kacharya, you may lower your hand. Right, Honourable Minister.
So I'm back from the Bahamas,
Disappointed.
No, Mr. Lee was getting jealous, you see, so...
which airline you took?
That's the secret factor.
I did not know the Concorde was back. All right, Minister, you may proceed.
The names of the SEP's chair, I'm sure the Honourable Gentleman is very well aware of the commercial factors and considerations in a matter that is talking to SEPs. So all of that detail will be released when the process is completed. At this stage, regrettably, I can't give any further information, because it might compromise our ability to finally settle on this matter. Then the question about whether all prescripts have been followed in terms of PFMA, I hope so. I think so. So there's no reason for us to actually not follow any of those prescripts. And I'll make a final remark on that question in a moment. Are there plans for SAA Mango to fly the vaccines regionally elsewhere? I think as a government, we have a huge responsibility to ensure that as many vaccines as possible are acquired whenever possible, wherever possible, in order that South Africans can be vaccinated. And if SAA, as a state-owned entity, can provide those services and is asked by government to do so and is capable of doing so, it must do so. Because the key issue is vaccines. people to the greatest extent possible, which I'm sure my honorable colleagues would actually agree with. So there might well be further requests from government, and this is now talking from a vaccine point of view, not as the minister responsible for SAA. I think we have an obligation to ensure that government is able, on behalf of its people, to do that which is necessary in order that they don't get further infected by this virus and are protected to whatever extent they can be by the vaccines that are available around the world. And if in the bargain, this assists SAA to actually utilize and materialize the huge potential there is for providing cargo services, that is something I've learned in the recent past, then certainly as many flights as are necessary should be undertaken on behalf of government as a government-owned entity at this point in time. So that's all I have to say, Chair. Thank you.
Chair, in respect of my questions, I wish to just clarify something as a point of clarification with the Minister, if you'll allow me. My clarification that's required, sorry, my video is off. My clarification that's required is that in respect of my first question, the Minister says that he refuses or cannot provide the names because that will compromise the commercial sensitivities. Secondly, he's in response to the second question, his answer is that he hopes that the PFMA was followed. And in respect of the third question, there's no answer to my final line of my question as to whether all PFMA requirements were adhered to. Is that the case?
As far as I know, they were, Chair. To the extent that it actually applies to a government-owned entity.
Right, let's do this. The interim board is here, as the accounting authority, and the DG of the department is here. These are not ministerial functions in any case. So I think that we not personalize the questions, but subject them to the process which they are supposed to follow. The persons who are implementing are present, and so the question is simple. Have you followed the PFMA prescripts in any activity or process that you have, which is so far as procurement is concerned? And then yes or no, and we will await the audit outcomes of the ongoing audits in so far as PPE procurement is concerned. So I think...
Okay, if I can just... Sorry, once you finished.
No, I was done.
No, actually you've helped Mr. Kacharya, because you know the PFMA is a huge tome. So I think which particular aspect is he referring to? But you've added the word procurement to probably help to clarify his question.
Yeah, I was
the word
I hope
wasn't in his question.
I hope I've captured him correctly. Honorable Kacharya?
Yes, in terms of procurement and in terms of delivery.
Okay, procurement and delivery. All right, the board will come to the board, and the DG of the department is here as well. All right. Are there any other further comments or questions on the questions, the first tranche, and then we'll move on to the second one? Let's do this. Honorable Kacharya?
He's available, Chair, if you wouldn't seem to come in.
The DG?
Yeah, good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon to the members and Minister and the colleagues that are on the line. Chair, the process of assisting with the COVID-19 effort has been obviously overseen by the NCCC, and on the DG side, there is an adjoint body that oversees this. Now, in line with the directives that would come from, or the requirements that would come from those particular forums, proper processes have been followed to ensure untasking SAA, which will be a client in this regard, on behalf of obviously the Department of Health when it comes to vaccines, in the same manner that it was tasked when it came to the PPE, and also in the repatriation of South Africans, the Department of International Cooperation and International Relations and Cooperation, DERCO, was the client. So as an accounting officer, I can give assurance that proper processes were followed in testing SAA in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, DG. Right, Honorable Kachale, the second tranche of questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These are now directed at the business rescue practitioners. The first question is, what is the estimated amount of funding required to keep SAA Technical and Mango operational and to return it to profitability? Secondly, what guarantee will the BRPs provide that the funds set aside for SAA's business rescue will not be used by them or any receivers who may subsequently be appointed for subsidiaries such as SAA Technical or Mango, as that is not in the business rescue plan? Thirdly, what is the extent of the liabilities, both current and non-current, of Mango and SAA Technical? Fourthly, where are any SAA or Mango pilots who are currently flying aircraft obtaining their training to remain up to date or current? Additionally, with regard to SAA flights, SAA 4272 particularly, and to and from Brussels to collect vaccines for COVID-19 on and about the 24th of February 2021, with a crew up to date in proficiency to fly the highest, most severe Category 3 instrument landings? B, a privately owned ATO outside South Africa was apparently used for the required additional flight crew training to undertake these flights. What was the cost of this training? Does the school belong to an SAA pilot? Was a formal tender process used to award the tender as required by the PFMA? Will any failure to adhere to the PFMA be investigated and the relevant persons responsible held accountable? Was the training received insufficient and therefore required requiring the application of multiple exemptions from the CAA? Finally, did Rolls-Royce, the engine manufacturers, and Airbus, aircraft manufacturers, make any reports to SAA that they had received automated reports of alpha floor incidents or incidents from the engines and aircraft used for these flights? If so, were these reports received by SAA? Thank you.
All right, can we get responses, please?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on the questions relating to Mango and SAT, which is question 1 and 3 about the amount required for Mango and SAT, as well as liabilities of Mango and SAT, I think I would leave that question to the department to respond to, as we are not have a direct line of sight in the financial reports of Mango and SAT. With regard to the funds set aside for the implementation of the business rescue and ensuring that the funds are used for the purpose they are designated for, Honorable Kachalia, there are a number of processes that are in place. One all the funds are all allocated into their respective buckets in order to ensure that the funds are used in line with their intended purpose. So, for example, the funds relating to the payment of the settlement of unpaid salaries, the VSPs, the retrenchment, are ring-fenced in that bucket for the payment of those particular line items. And so are the funds for unflown ticket liability, the funds for the payment of concurrent of post-commencement creditors, etc., etc. However, there's an important override that there are funds for the working capital of the airline, and those funds for the working capital of the airline fund the current operations of the airline. And that's important. The second and most important point relating to the funds is that the receivership has been established specifically to receive funds that will be used to discharge our obligations to lenders, aircraft lessors, and general concurrent creditors in line with the plan, so that those funds are also used for the purposes that they are intended for. And that's very important. Currently, I will also not respond to where the pilots for Mango are obtaining their training. But as far as the SAA pilots are concerned, when we undertook that flight, yes, we did procure the services of the flight training school. That procurement was in line with the PFMA. And Honorable Chair will be more than happy to provide full answers in writing on this one as well. The pilot is not linked to SAA, but or rather the owner of the school is not linked to SAA, but is an ex-pilot, which is why he's able to run a training school. However, we have subsequently ceased from procuring flight from procuring training from outside bodies because that was in contravention with certain requirements of the regulating agreement. When I mentioned earlier, Honorable Chair, that one of the fundamental issues the airline has with the regulating agreement is the fact that it hampers the board and management from making certain executive decisions other than if it gets the go-ahead from SAPA. And in this case, the training at SAA is all done by SAPA pilots. And to the extent that SAPA pilots and SAPA are not willing to consent to the airline procuring those services outside of SAPA during the period of a lockout, then the airline is not in a position to do so. And then the last question from Honorable Kachalia was the matter relating to whether or not any reports were received from Airbus. I am aware that reports have been received from Airbus, but I'm also willing to have that matter confirmed in writing once we have also engaged with the SAA Safety Department, just to make sure that our response is appropriate. Thank you.
Chair, again for clarification, am I correct in understanding that the BRPs have no line of sight into the funding or liabilities, current and non-current, of Mango and SAA Technical? And if that is incorrect, if they do, why is this question not being answered and being fielded to the DPE? Thank you.
Right, can you clarify the nature of your response, Mr. Business Rescue Practitioner?
Honorable Chair, I think it's our responsibilities as practitioners are limited to a statutory entity where we have been appointed. And that statutory entity in this instance is SAA, which is why we do not have any basis in law to answer questions relating to the subsidiaries, which are standalone statutory entities, because those entities have got their board and management, and it would be a significant case of overreach on the part of the practitioners to do so, Chair.
Okay.
Just one single question. Do these subsidiaries impact on the financial viability of SAA? And if they do, then surely it affects the business rescue plan, and that the answer that I've received is not sufficient.
Honorable Chair, if I may, with your permission.
You may proceed, sir.
I think it's important for us to highlight from an SAA point of view that SA Technica and Airchefs are service providers to SAA. And for those services that we procure, when the need arises for SAA to procure services to SAA Technical or Airchefs, the airline will ensure that the subsidiaries are paid for the services that they render to the airline. So to the extent that the airline restart operations and is readying itself to fly on a full scale, it will procure services from SAA Technical in the ordinary course of business, as it will procure services from Airchefs in the ordinary course of business. Thank you, Chair.
Just 1 second. On slide 4 of your presentation, you speak about the recapitalization of subsidiaries. SAT or SAAT and Airchefs and Mango to the tune of 2.7 billion rands. So what are the determining factors of when it's overreach and when it's not in the context of the 2.7 billion rands?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to answer part of the question, and I'm sure the department would step in. The shareholder is responsible for the recapitalization of its entities, and in this instance, the 2.7 billion for the recapitalization of subsidiaries is provided in the 10.5 billion, and that 10.5 billion will be received from the fiscus and directed to SAA in the ordinary course of the allocation from the shareholder as the provider of those capitalization funds. The important thing from an SAA point of view is under what conditions can SAA be a conduit to provide those funds to the subsidiaries. And SAA will be able to be a conduit to provide those funds to the subsidiaries if itself it is solvent and liquid. And Chair, the process of coming out of the business rescue will certainly happen because SAA would have reached solvency and liquidity for it to come out of business rescue.
So the 2.7 billion rands, does that form part of saving SAA or not? Or you are just merely a conduit borrow the word you have used.
In this instance, Chair, absolutely correct. We are a conduit to the subsidiaries.
That suffices. So, are there any other further follow-ups?
Chairman, just if I may.
The vulnerable list.
Yeah. You quite correctly, I think, raised this, and I don't want to belabor the point, but the BRP seemed to have had access to SA Technical and Mango sufficiently to be able to calculate a figure of 2.7 billion rand to be requested from the taxpayer, and yet now they feign no access at all and not their problem. But nevertheless, can we have the answer then from the DPE?
DG?
Yeah, well, thank you, Chair. The 2.7 billion rands was a product of an engagement with the executive teams of the subsidiaries where they had assessed their business with the assistance of our financial analysis team to arrive at a figure, figures that would be required to revive, to capitalize the business, of course, restructure the businesses, and also get them operating at an appropriate level going forward. Yeah. And my research as well is Mango had indicated that it requires just under a billion rand to get going, and it's about 1.5 billion rand that would go towards what SAA Technical, and about 200 million rands was intended for airships. As the BRPs have indicated, for the funds to flow, SAA, because it's the conduit, has to be put into the right position financially, and of course there has to be also a plan from the subsidiaries, a replanning, if I may say so, in view of the fact that a lot of the factors that informed the original plan those have changed. So we're going to have a re-look at that. Now the process as to when the 2.7 will get to these entities will be determined by the parliamentary process, as the special appropriations bill that would have enabled the funds to come through could not be attended to before the parliament went into recess. So we obviously are hopeful that soon after we have come back, that the parliament will deal with the matter and the 2.7 billion rand can flow. But we're also hoping that as the BRPs do their own recalculations and determine the cash that is available within the business, that the entities can at least be enabled to make the initial steps with regard to restructuring, because as things stand, what used to be their revenue base has eroded quite substantially. As you know, Mango is I think an average is putting up about five aircraft up in the air. It needs to obviously to bring back its cost structure to fit in the revenue base. The same applies to SAA Technical. It needs to do that. But also are hopeful, or rather we do believe that correctly positioned, SAA Technical should be able to attract quite a bit of business outside its traditional customer base. So that's as the new executive team comes in at both group and at subsidiary level, that is one of the areas that they must preoccupy themselves with to ensure that we develop plans that will ensure sustainable subsidiaries going forward. I hope that answers the questions. Thank you, Chair.
So you are waiting for the special appropriation.
That's correct. For the
7 billion rand to flow. So special appropriation in colloquial language is bailout.
No. I think we have described what bailout is on numerous occasions, and we if I recall well, at this forum as well. The bailout chair is when you're providing capital to an entity to cover operational shortfalls. What we are dealing with here is primarily to ensure that the group is restructured to ensure that there's a sustainable way forward. As Minister Godane has plainly put it at the beginning, government has committed to funding the restructuring effort driven by the business rescue process. And that's what we are dealing with. And to call it a bailout, I think it would be inappropriate. Thank you.
So this 2.7 billion rands is required as a result of the collapse of SAA, the direct consequence.
Well, as a result of SAA, as of December 2019, being found not to have a workable business plan that needed to be addressed, and having a cost structure that literally ran away from it, I wouldn't call it collapse, Jeff.
We can come in, please.
And just the final question, DG, on that. Please to say, has SAA not been in the position that it's in to borrow the sanitization of the BG? Let's put it that way. SAA had not been in the position that it was in. These subsidiaries would not be requiring the 2.7 billion rands as things stand now, which must be processed through the special appropriation. So the special appropriation is a direct result of the fact that SAA is being fixed.
Yeah. Chapter 2.7, if I can reiterate again, it's not new money. It's funds that that are committed already in the MTDTS already last year. So it's not new money. It's funds that have to be corrected. If I can finish my point on that. I'm coming to your question.
Get to the question. Get to the question.
Yeah, you're bringing up as well. I'm unable to. You know, I'm coming to your question, Chief. I think it's, don't be fair. Give me an opportunity to answer it.
The question to answer the question, and for us not to be boggled down with meanders. That's what I'm trying to get.
I don't know what meanders is, Chair, but in fact, let me finish. Let me answer your question. As I said, the 2.7 billion rand is not new money. It's coming from the 10.5 that was announced in the MTBPS. And secondly, the impact of SAA on the subsidiary, to a large extent, you could say you are making a case with regard to the SAA technical, because obviously provide maintenance to SAA, and obviously that revenue base would have eroded. Now, but that cannot be the full story, because we have also the impact of COVID-19 that would have affected all its customers. That includes the Comair Group, that includes the line maintenance work that they do on international airlines that fly into South Africa. And as you know, the borders were closed, so that revenue base was not there. So business has to restructure accordingly. In the same vein, as it relates to COVID-19, it has had a huge impact on Mango, like it has done on other airlines as well. We have a market in 2020 that collapsed by 85% when compared to 2019. No business can realistically be sustainable with a revenue base overall that has collapsed to that extent. And I think that's what we need to be able to tell South Africa. Thank you.
That's fine. We've heard the very...
Can I get clarity on one point, please, Mr. Chairman?
One second, Honourable, and you'll come to you, and the Minister will come in. We've heard the COVID refrain. And you see, the problem with COVID is that it went on to expose
already existing challenges and complicated those challenges. So whilst COVID may have been an impact, it's not the primary impact. You speak about SA Technical having fixing airlines. HS was providing food. You may speak with the benefit of the knowledge that you have, but seated here, this parliament has not had the benefit of annual state financial statements from SAU for 3 years to enable us to make a informed judgment on the state of affairs. So if you want the full story, it goes back to that point, that the lack of compliance, the failure to submit for whatever reason, became a snowball effect, and when COVID hit, things exploded. So if we want to go down the semantics and the meanders which I was referring to, then we'll get to that point. My question was very, very simple. Is the 2.7 billion rand a direct result, or rather a result, of the position which SAA is in now? And I did not use the word collapse as you had directed. So we can play the ball of whatever that the DG is trying to bring our way. We can do that as well. We're quite competent to do that. Honorable Liz, and Minister, you will come in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just a little confused and I need clarification, because on the one hand, the DG is saying that the 2.7 billion is part of the allocation from the medium-term budget policy statement. And on the other hand, he's saying there's a special appropriation bill coming. Well, which is it?
Right, Honorable Minister Godan.
So, Chair, the last question that Mr. Lees asks can be directed to the National Treasury. They're in the best place to clarify why they've taken the approach that they've taken. Secondly, in response to some of the points that you've been making, you're right, the original sin wasn't COVID, the original sin was state capture. And state capture wasn't there just in terms of SAA, the airline. It was a phenomenon that impacted SAA, the group. And therefore, in that group were all these subsidiaries. So all of them were impacted by malfeasance, by overemployment of people, by stealing of parts from SA Technical. That was partly rectified, but mostly not rectified. Just before Business Rescue came onto the scene, and the previous manager at SAA Technical prior to Business Rescue was under the direction of the board then actually in the process of restructuring FAAT, and Section 189 notices had been served. I don't have the full details of exactly how far they went, but some of them were processed during that particular time as well. So there is a history before Business Rescue, which history is directly connected to the state capture process and the corruption that took place during that time, from which SAA, the group, not the airline, but the group, had not recovered from. And then, of course, you had the Business Rescue that the airline was actually put into. And when we, as a department, wanted to look into some of the subsidiaries, as I recollected, the Business Rescue practitioners from time to time hesitated about whether we could do so or not. So it's a combination of factors that go into the past, that go into the period prior to Business Rescue, and that go into the period subsequent to Business Rescue, and that is then compounded by the more recent developments that have been impacting the aviation industry more generally. So I think it's a collection of that. Secondly, I thought we had clarified already that it's not our fault that the question of financial accounts and so on have not been done. The process has been where it has been in the past. The boards have been before you. They've explained why they could not prepare financial statements. And then, as I reported to you earlier on, it is the Auditor General who, because of the Business Rescue status of SAA has not been able to do the audits, and I did give you the assurance that as we get out of business rescue, or SAA gets out of business rescue, I will consult once again with the Auditor General and see how those financials can be made available. Thank you very much.
No, I mean, it was not a matter of placing blame, but I thought that if we want to now venture down instances of context and so on, we will place our dilemmas as well, and then that doesn't help us. We will engage with the AG as well on this issue, as we have done in the past, insofar as this matter is concerned. And it was precisely why we were prompted as a committee to schedule a visit to SAA, I mean December 2019, which we held back on when it was announced that there was business rescue practitioners being brought in at the time. But what I'm certainly not going to allow as a normalization here is deflection. That I won't allow. That game can be played elsewhere, not here.
No, Chair, I don't know whether I'm deflecting. It's that accusation you're making.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Mr. I'm saying in the context of the questions that had been posed and then the intervention that you had made, that what you said, be not what was said originally, would not have had what we just had. That's where we are. We certainly know.
I think it's important, Chair, that the executive and the legislature find a way of interacting that is constructive and helpful to all sides concerned, and I'm certainly committed to that.
No, that certainly remains our outlook as well. Right. Two questions from my part to the business rescue practitioners. That in the period in which they have been there, how much have they cost the taxpayer? So how much has this business rescue exercise cost us, the South Africans? And the second question is when they're anticipating wrapping up their work, considering that they've been there since December 2019, and it is now March 2021. And uncertainty, let me just be very frank, I'm not going to accept a response that says this will be brought in writing, because it never arrives. Every time things are said that they will come in writing, we never get them. So can I just get some responses to those two questions, please?
Thank you, Chair. I think the last time we were at the committee, I think the minister may have presented that at that time the business rescue costs were in the region of 200 million. We would certainly provide the committee, as we did the last time, with a written report on where the costs are, and as we did the last time, the various buckets of where the costs have been spent. Certainly, if that's acceptable to you, Chair, we'll simply update the previous report that we had given to you. On the second...
What would be RP?
Yes, Chair.
Never received it, and that's why I'm asking this question today.
Yeah, I have a slide in front of me if you want me to read it out.
Right, let's get the business rescue person to finish his response, and then you will read it.
That will be helpful, Minister. On the second question, Honourable Chair, when do we anticipate exiting the business rescue process? As I mentioned in the in our presentation, the receivers have been appointed. We are in the process of finalising the opening up of bank accounts for the receivership and making sure that the administration for the receivership is set up. We are in the process of finalizing the payment of the post-commencement creditors. As we had indicated that in the plan,
we have to either pay employees or ring fence monies to employees, as well as finalize the payment of post-commencement creditors. And we indicated in our presentation some of the challenges we experience with certain of the creditors in the reconciliation processes. And from our side is to just make sure that we go through those reconciliation processes and we make the payment and we close the books accordingly. The third thing that we are currently busy with is that once we've made all the payments, we will be then effecting the transitioning of the accounts that will go into the receivership, so that the receivership then is in a position to make those payments to lenders, aircraft lessors, as well as concurrent creditors over the next 3 years. So where we are, Chair, is we believe fundamentally we should exit the business rescue in the next couple of weeks, all things going according to plan.
A couple of weeks, it's not very specific or not a ballpark, a couple is generic. Right.
Maybe just to be specific, our aim has always been from the moment we received the third tranche of 5 billion, our aim has always been to try and wrap things to the end of March and exit at the end of March, just to be open and clear. The only thing that I'm just raising is that it's also not just a timing issue, it's also a process issue, that there are certain key events that we must make sure as practitioners we wrap up and close them appropriately.
No, that is fine. I'm going to assume that there's no targeted date, because end of March is less than a week away. And from where I'm sitting, I don't think that's going to be possible. But we will keep an eye on it, not with understanding the set of circumstances you have narrated. Right, Honourable Minister?
The numbers, Chair, I have in front of me are the following. Adamantum, which is Mr. Dangwana's firm, these are up to, I think, the end of December, with one qualification that I'll come to at the end. So Adamantum, 28.2 million. Matheson and Associates, 23.7 million. Mr. Matheson himself has not taken any fees for a couple of months. Edward Nathan Sonnenberg, the legal advisor, 41.6 million. Alvarez and Marcel, if you remember, they were the aviation advisors at the beginning, 61.1 million. PwC, 38.7 million. Then there's a number of smaller figures. Allen and Overy, which is some legal advisor, 8.2 million. That's CMAC Consulting, valuation advisor, 2.6 million. Holstein Attorneys, legal advisor, 0.1 million. Thomas, I think it's Bastos, B-A-S-T-O-S, legal advisor, 0.3 million. Redford Capital, no description yet, 0.3 million. Norton Rose, legal advisor, 0.5 million. Bowman's, legal advisor, 0.7 million. The company called Astute, A-S-T-U-T-E, business distress advisor, 1.7 million. Misunderstood it, that these numbers are up to the 26th of May 2020. completion, another 34. So that total for that numbers I've given you, Chair, is 207.5. And the estimate that follows is 35.5. And then an estimate of total BR cost, 243. But as you can see, that these numbers are not up to date. But that's the slide that I had in front of me.
That's May 2020. That's 10 months ago.
Yeah. I thought it was up to December, Chair, but there might be some confusion in that regard. But I thought it might still help you. And I want to make a few concluding remarks once you avail that opportunity to me. Thank you.
Fine, colleagues, can we do that?
Mr. Chairman, if you're asking our opinion, I don't think we have too much option. I don't think that we've had a completely satisfactory set of answers. But may I ask that once again we attempt to submit written questions as per our previous encounter and ask for a swift turnaround on written replies to the questions that have not been answered. Thank you.
Right, now here's what we're going to do. Can we get an updated schedule, which is not May 2020? And if colleagues have got any other questions, if they can send those through, and we'll send them through to SAA and DPE tomorrow, and request that we get those answers by close of business next week, Friday. And should we not receive them, I will have to engage with the presiding officers and the leader of government business, insofar as the movement of responses from SAA is concerned. They're just never forthcoming. And then the committee will have to explore its options at that point, so that we can tie down on this open-endedness which has been self-granted. So we will send through those questions tomorrow, safe to say that it's already now known that can we get an updated schedule of the costs, so that we've got that. There's questions which Honorable Lees had asked insofar as flights and so on, which the business rescue practitioners indicate may have a material bearing on competitiveness. We'll look at that, and we will provide the necessary the guidance in that regard, because I did say I'll come back to it. We'll look at that, and then I will go back to Hansard and the transcript once it's available on some of the matters that prevailed earlier on. But may I hand over to, maybe Minister, before I come to you, can we go to the business rescue practitioners if they've got concluding remarks, and then Minister, you will come in.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just one correction. I think the numbers are at December 2020 and not May 2020. But we will most certainly provide an updated schedule through the department as the BRPs. And finally, on our side, Chair, just to thank you and the committee. We hope that we'll be able to wrap up the business rescue proceedings in line with our anticipated timelines, and also hope that once the BR proceedings have been wrapped up, SAA is going to be able to continue on a sound footing. Thank you very much.
Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. The first point I want to make is that from a shareholder point of view, we would like the business rescue process to conclude sooner rather than later. And secondly, that prior to that occurring, there should be a proper handover report in writing, plus a proper handover process from the business rescue practitioners to the interim board, so that the interim board is in a position to manage the affairs of SAA going forward properly. Thirdly, Mr. Dongwana and Nkosana have been confirmed, it would appear, as receivers, although we had some doubts about whether they should make themselves available for that. And I want to register this right now, before even the receivership starts, that we hope we don't get into the same kind of expensive exercise in terms of fees that this business rescue process has cost the state. And so we will be looking at that very, very carefully. The fourth point is the point I've made about the Pilots Association and the demand that the regulatory agreement still applies, and to send a very public message to them that on the one hand they want an airline that will continue to employ them. On the other hand, they're doing everything possible, as I said earlier, to sabotage this airline from ever taking off. So I don't know how they reconcile those two positions. The next point, and perhaps the last one, is to say that we will do whatever is required in order to get vaccines from wherever it is available, and complement that with cargo that, in fact, can be filled in either way, from South Africa outwards or from external countries inwards, within 24 hours once we announce that there's a flight. And that's the extent of demand that there is globally at this particular point in time. And that's regrettably one of the areas that has been not given adequate attention in terms of bringing revenue into SAA during this past period as well. And we hope that once the certain questions are available, that the BRPs, and we'll liaise with them in this regard, will make the answers available. One caution, Chair, next Friday is Good Friday, I think. So there's no business, therefore there's no close of business. So you might want to make
the close of business. We tend to work during holidays and weekends as well in this committee, in any case, processing correspondence.
Thank you.
Also, given the pending lockdown, of course, we may not even be at church, so we will be at home in any case. So if we can get that on Thursday, but we will look at it and make it practical. I think that's the issue, is to make it practical and not to be hostile about it. So if next week as a short week becomes problematic, we are not difficult to flexibility, but we will spread it out in the later ones. The questions have come through. I just want to probably conclude by saying that this process can't be open-ended. It needs to be brought to a logical, economic, functional conclusion, insofar as the sustainability and viability of SAA is concerned, and to rescue an airline which found itself in this kind of chaotic and messy position. And it remains of particular concern to us as a committee, and this is why we will be engaging with the AG again on the set of circumstances which characterize the possibility of beginning an audit for an integral part of the investigations that are taking place at SAA. Have operated with the SIU
because in we have to learn from the mistakes of the past. And the audit itself is an enabler to those lessons, or for those lessons to arise and nip this perpetual crisis mode of SAA in the bud and make sure that we move on to other issues. So every time the audit cycle begins and SAA is unable to be audited, critical and vital things fall through the cracks, hindering investigations, hindering consequence management, and hindering the possibility of learning the fundamental lessons as to what one should not do to collapse an airline. So we must not put the taxpayer in a position where we continuously are throwing financial solutions to non-financial problems. That money doesn't fix everything. Something's got to give. And so we need a global picture of what happened at SAA. The Zondo Commission is one, the audit outcomes is one, the investigations is one, and the business rescue process is one, to name but a few. Because crisis compounds crisis, and the COVID-19 crisis compounded the SAA crisis. And so to use the COVID-19 reality as the yardstick measure of our assessment, we are merely fooling ourselves when we know that these problems have been there for the longest of time, including but not limited to SAA technical. As I've pointed out before, the Fifth Parliament scope went to SAA. And so for some of us who are there, what has happened is not a surprise when you look at just that even the most basic of controls were absent. Because a reliance on bailouts, on special appropriations, feeds into a outlook in these SOEs that we can carry on business as usual, the taxpayer will carry us through. But a shrinking tax base, a revenue shortfall, amongst others, make it even more difficult to pull these SOEs out of these problems. So the urgency to fix things arises out of that particular outlook, to say SAA should be making money for South Africa, not the other way around. We are in desperate need of an economy that is robust, flourishing, aggressive for growth and development, particularly for young people, who I generally always want to speak on behalf of in this parliament as one of them, to say the situation is desperate. And desperate times often call for urgency. So after 240 odd million rands of a business rescue process, it must not be in vain. It must not be in vain. So much is riding on this. That's just the desperation of the situation. And it calls for cooperation, and it calls for mutual respect, and it calls on all of us to perform our duties and responsibilities wherever we are deployed, for Parliament to hold the executive to account, departments and entities, and for them to answer the questions that we would pose. It's not personal. It's just because of work. I tell my friends every morning I leave my emotions in bed, so that when I hear all these things, my sense of shock is reduced. So we hope that you will be able to get those responses and hope that this matter is brought to a conclusion. This business rescue process has cost us money, and it has to be concluded. So we will look back at it and see what we can, and collaborate with the portfolio committee insofar as where our outlook is and our position is. And honestly, all we want to the interim board is to say there's no more money. Ayikho imali. Don't sound dizzy. So daggy. So SAA must be self-sufficient, self-functional, and self-sustainable. And consequence management has to form part of that. So that those who think SOEs must be pillaged, they must walk the plank. And the only way to do that is if there's functionality in all the respective places of work to pull the elements of state capture corruption and enablers out of the dark and onto the trajectory of successful prosecutions and recoveries. So I'd like to thank you very much for that, and I hope that whilst the matters have not been exhausted, but I believe that Parliament is in a better position to assess these matters and hopefully moving forward make informed decisions on the basis of information that's provided for us. So I'd like to thank you very much. Colleagues, Minister, thank you very much to you and the Ministry, the DG, and the Department, the Board. Thank you, and to the business rescue practitioners. We wish you well. Be safe on the roads and be safe from COVID. And yes, SAA is an integral part of the fight against COVID. So that's why it has to function. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned.